Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to Scare You to Sleep. I'm your host, Shelby Novak, and I'm here to read you a bedtime story. This week we have a story from author Jeff Kreiss, whose work you may remember from the story 4th of July. Jeff is back with tonight's episode, It Won't Happen Again. It won't happen again. It meant nothing. She meant nothing. She. Of all his words, it is she that cuts the deepest, tearing wide and plunging deep. She leaves behind a ragged wound. Nothing. Nothing rips me in a way as if to say that whatever nothing he feels for her is actually more than the regard he holds for me. It just happened. His solemn voice sounds like it echoes from another room at the end of a long and far away corridor. His eyes beg for understanding. The betrayer seeks comfort in the betrayed. Forgiven, but not forgotten, until too much remembered can no longer be forgotten. Until too much forgotten can no longer be forgiven. I stand with my arms crossed over my chest in denial, as I'm contorted by the truth. Yet even as the murky slurry of backwashed words seeps through his lips, I still love him. Each of his excuses, each attempt to justify himself is another thrust from his knife. Every word from the trench he digs is another shovel full of hurt, heaped into the freshly opened grave of my heart. Yet, despite this, still, I love him. He knows exactly what to say and how to say it. He knows how to use his eyes to mesmerize and his lips to seal the deal. He knows the way I need to be held, in the way that always feels like the first time. He holds me close, and I feel his promise whispered warmly against my neck. It won't happen again, he says. I tell him, if we're going to survive this, we need to talk to someone, a professional, couples counseling. His expression conveys a shadow of surprise, but with a well-practiced smile, he says, I'll do anything. Soft music plays quietly from behind the receptionist's desk. Another waiting client, only pretending to read, turns the pages of a magazine. I hear the door open.
Hello. You can both follow me back this way.
She is beautiful. Of course she is. I know he notices, but he does well in hiding his observation. She gestures us into the doorway of her cozy little softly lit office nook. So inviting are the neutral tones and abstract pastel paintings on the wall.
"Have a seat,"
she says welcomingly. We take our seats, and before the awkwardness of the situation can further saturate the moment, she introduces herself cheerily.
"Okay, so hello, I am Dr. Melanie Chambers. Before we even begin, I want you both to know that within these four walls, you are both safe and free. Free to say and be anything you want or need to be. Don't expect a lot out of our first session, as this is the introductory portion of the process. I will do my best to get to know you each well enough to assess whether or not I am a good fit for you. I want to help you both achieve a greater understanding of yourselves individually, as well as a couple. My goal is to help you both find clarity and ultimately healing. So, all of that being said, what brings you both in today?"
I sigh as I am about to begin when Trent speaks.
"I cheated, and not just once. This is my fault. It's my fault we're here. Fiona is amazing. I'll do anything, even this."
Dr. Chambers leans back in her seat, realizing a small exhale.
"Okay, open and honest. I like that."
Her inquisitive eyes move to me.
"Fiona, where would you like to start?"
I think there would be a good place,"
I answered. She smiles acceptingly and says,
"That's perfect. Then that is exactly where we will begin."
The session went well. Better than I expected. We lay it all out. Dr. Chambers asks a host of questions, and we answer them all. Suddenly, the hour is up, and we confirm our next appointment. We stand up and say our goodbyes. It wasn't anything she said, or even the way she said it. No, it was in the way her hand, ever so slightly, grazed Trent's forearm on the way out the door. It's the way he seems to hide his smile. Was that a glimmer in his eyes? It's in the way they seem to share something with a look, something it seems I am not entirely of equal part. In our first session, Dr. Chambers emphasized openness and honesty. So I decide to put it into practice.
"I think we should see someone else,"
I proclaim. He looks at me, surprised.
"What? Why? I thought it went well today. I have a good feeling about her."
"Her." His answer haunts me. I can't help but to snap back with,
"And that's what bothers me."
He laughs. It's not a side-splitting laugh, but a scoff. It rubs my already raw nerves like a new piece of sandpaper. Something lurking beneath the way he says, "Her." It stings like she. I imitate the way she touched his arm as we were leaving. He gives me an accusatory look, as if to imply that I'm crazy. Deranged, even.
"Look,"
he says,
"I know I messed up, and big time, I know this is all my fault. Don't do this. It won't help anything. It won't help us. It meant nothing."
I only heard three words. It meant nothing. So familiar is the cold feeling that crawls over me. So deep is the pit that falls open in my stomach. The conversation abruptly dissipates into silence. The ride home is long and quiet. There are few words exchanged before the sun sets on that day. The following morning is met with a newness. A warm coffee and breakfast in bed greets me as I am lulled from my slumber. Trent looks as fresh as the sunlight that cascades over his perfectly chiseled jawline and granite cheekbones.
I'm sorry yesterday didn't go as well as we both hoped. Today, though, today is a new day.
He sweeps my messy hair from my eyes and smiles meekly.
Peace offering.
Those damned eyes and that damned smile. I take the coffee cup from his offering hands and take a sip.
All this time together and you still can't make a good cup of coffee.
I offer him a smile. He's trying. I know he is. He smiles back in relief. His eyes light up a little and he asks,
"Let's get away for the day. Nothing crazy, just a day trip to the lake. Some good eats, what do you say?"
Something once so innocuous is now a bold leap over the flames.
"I don't know,"
I say ponderingly.
"Okay, I understand."
He gets up from the bed and walks away defeated.
"Wait,"
I say.
"Okay, let's do it. I could use a change of scenery."
He smiles.
"That's my girl."
I watch his face strain from joy to awkward, overstepped regret. I decided to offer encouragement.
"Just give me some time to get myself ready."
He smiles again, seemingly reassured, and says,
"Take your time. We have the rest of our lives."
We have a great day, actually. It felt light and airy. The weather was perfect. We had a great lunch and dinner, and on the drive home, we listened to our favorite music. Overcome by the ease of the day, a night that in so many ways was reminiscent of how they used to be, and that night, I gave in. Everything was almost perfect for a couple of months. Therapy was going great. We were connecting again just like before. Everything was better.
Until it wasn't. It began with strange phone calls at odd times and stepping out of the room to take those calls. More incoming text message alerts than usual. Longer days and nights at the office. Sudden and more frequent unavailability. Last-minute changes to our plans and, eventually, last-minute cancellations. The effort, once being so vigorously invested, suddenly became one-sided before slamming to a bitter halt. When I asked questions and began to prod, I was met with resistance and then indifference. Completely brushed off like little more than a pesky fly at a picnic. When I pushed harder, the disregard was then greeted with annoyance begetting anger and then nothing. At our next session, things were tense and even harsh. I'm not a fan of throwing in the towel, but sometimes there comes a point when acceptance is all that remains. Therapy is not a guaranteed cure-all. Sometimes it is merely a means of processing and accepting what has been, what is, and what will be. A step towards whatever season of life is next. Sometimes, unfortunately, what's next isn't what we planned for or wanted, but rather the next step in our journey, the next bend in the path. Either way, we grow and we move on.
Mr. Chambers casually eulogizes our relationship with disingenuous resignation. She shares her observations in what led Trent and I to this point. But it's what she says next that lights me on fire.
Fiona, if you're unwilling to let go and forgive, then there is no path forward. I do believe it is the walls you continue to build that are preventing reconciliation.
What did you just say? I responded with the seething venom of a cornered viper, coiled and poised to strike.
Are you actually placing the blame on me? Are you saying it's me that's to blame, not him and his inability to control his base nature? That him going out and screwing every pretty thing he sees isn't the indisputable cause for all this? Are you kidding me?
At this, Dr. Chambers slinks back into her seat and with complete indifference says,
I can no longer be your therapist. I am sorry, but I simply can't. If you would like a referral, I would be more than happy to provide you with one. I am sorry, and I wish both of you the best of luck.
I am a whirlwind of emotions as Trent gets up from his seat and says, goodbye, Melanie.
Melanie? Since when are we on a first-name basis with our therapist?
I screamed.
Please, this session is over. Our receptionist can help you with future referrals. I'm sorry I couldn't be of more help.
Dr. Chambers says, in finality. Trent storms out of the room and I follow. In the lobby, he turns to me.
It's over. It's been over for a long time. We were just too dumb to see it.
I replied.
What? You're ending it with me? You? After the hell you've dragged me through, you're ending it with me? My blood boils. I could tear his face off. I'm sorry, Fiona. We tried. I'm sorry, but there's nothing left between us. We're over. I'm done.
Just like that, he storms off, leaving me standing alone in the lobby.
The humiliation of it all. The stares of people caught up in the front row seat to our demise. It takes everything in me to remain composed as I fight back tears of rage and agony. I have a good cry in my car. My only comfort is in the fact that we drove separately. And I can, at least, have this moment of misery to myself.
A week goes by. Not a word from Trent. When out of nowhere, my phone rings. I look to see that it's him. I stare at the screen for an eternity. I don't know why I chose to pick it up. Old habits, I suppose. I answer,
what the hell do you want?
Hey, Fiona, I don't want to fight or anything like that.
Then what do you want?
I replied. He answers,
I have some things of yours, and you have some things of mine. I just hoped we could return to each other our belongings.
He called me about things? It's not the things I care about, it's the things I need to say to him, though that would be best done in person, face to face. I'm traditional in that sense of the word. We set a time, we agreed to meet at a small diner. The phone goes dead.
He would usually stand to greet me if we were arriving separately somewhere. He instead sees me enter the diner and offers little more than a half smile before letting his eyes wander back to the window, and then the napkin dispenser, and then the salt and pepper shakers. He nervously fumbles with his spoon and he lightly twirls the remainder of his coffee, only making eye contact again when I am at the table. He takes in a self-soothing breath and exhales a forced, "Hello." A hello that would be no differently offered to a stranger in passing on the street. "How are you?" he asks me. "Fine," I say. He clears his throat.
"Thanks for meeting me. I won't keep you long."
"Yes, it would seem that was always your intention," I reply bitterly.
"Okay, I can see how this is already going,"
he says impatiently.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Am I being a bitch again?"
I can feel my jaw clench.
"What exactly were you expecting this to be like?"
"Pretty much exactly like this,"
he answers smugly.
"Fiona, look, I'm sorry. I feel bad about all of this. I do. I never meant to hurt you."
I interrupt furiously.
"No, but you did, didn't you, Trent? Over and over again you did. How many lies do I not even know about? I don't know how I thought we could work things out. I don't even know why I wanted to. I held on to the fantasy of what we were long ago and failed to see."
Trent stops me.
"We were good. We were great. For a while. Then we weren't. We're just different people."
I snap back.
"Yes. We certainly are two very different people in every way."
His phone dings. He looks at the screen and hurriedly lays it back face down on the table.
"Who is that? Your newest whore?"
"Fiona, I don't want to fight with you. That's not why I wanted to see you. I just want to give you back your things, and I'd like to have mine. That's it. I'm an asshole. You're right. I don't blame you for hating me. I deserve that after everything. What's done is done. I'm sorry, but it's time we move on."
His eyes look down to the duffel bag resting beside him on his side of the booth. He looks back to me.
"Is everything in there?"
His eyes fixed on the bag next to me.
"Yes, everything except for my wasted time,"
I hissed. Trent let out an exacerbated huff.
"Okay, can you wait a few more minutes? I just need to use the restroom before I head out. I have to catch a flight in 2 hours. There's just one thing I need to ask you when I come back, and we can be on our way."
"Business or pleasure?"
I lash back.
"It's business, but none of yours, Fiona."
He looks down at his hands, and he rolls his knuckles in his palm.
"I'll be right back. Just give me 1 minute."
"Fine. Hurry."
The second he walks into the bathroom, his phone rings again. Then a moment later, it rings again. Then a voicemail alert. He comes back and sits while collecting himself, as if bracing for the wrath he will face as soon as his next words take flight.
"Well, what is it?"
I ask.
"Do you have my mother's necklace? Is it in there? Did you bring that?"
I'm stunned. "Do you mean the necklace your mother gave me?"
"Yes, that one,"
he barks back.
"She gave me that before she died. What the hell do you mean, did I bring it? Why would I?"
Unless it hits me.
"You want that back?"
I take it in.
"Your mother gave that to me as a gift."
He huffs and interrupts.
"Yes, I know she gave it to you, but she gave it to you because she thought we would be getting married, which obviously we won't be. So yes, I would like it back. It was my grandmother's, and I would like it back."
My rage boils. I could grab one of the butter knives on the table and bury it in his jugular. The thought of his blood spurting and spilling out on the table like a ruptured water main is intoxicating.
I hold it in.
Very well,
I say calmly.
I don't have it with me, though, no. It seems I underestimated the breadth of how vile and petty you can be.
He chuffs to himself.
I'm sorry, but I think it's reasonable considering the situation. Say no more. I'll give your precious necklace back. What value would it have to me now, anyway?
I get up and roughly toss him his heavy bag of his precious things.
I'll call you about it.
As I start to leave, he says,
I'll be out of town for at least 2 weeks. I'll call you when I get back, and we can arrange it then.
Thank you, Fiona.
Go to hell,
I yell back as I make my humiliating exit before the startled eyes of everyone seated in the now silent diner. Lies and humiliation, betrayal and deception. Forgiveness, in my experience, is a fool's endeavor. Nothing is ever really forgotten. There is nothing left between us. Trent's words. How wrong you are, my love. The call I have been waiting for. Mommy's necklace is, after all, of the utmost importance. Of course I oblige. It's in my nature. He wants to know when we can meet. I tell him, you know what? I need a couple of days. I have some things I need to take care of. But how about 3 nights from now? He agrees. As well as he knows how to play me, I also know what makes him weak. I know what he can't resist. He can never say no to my 5 3/4 inch satin, leather, pointy toe stilettos. I know the little black dress that sets him on fire. He likes my hair down, thick and wavy, eyeshadow deep and dark, smoky and heavy, eyeliner sharp and fierce, lashes full and curled, can't forget the nails, freshly French manicured. He likes my silver thin rope bracelet on my wrist and the one for my ankle. My perfume that smells like autumn leaves and sage with a hint of amber. The trap is set. He is, after all, but a man. His eyes light up when I open my door. From a man to a dog, salivating at the sight of a slab of meat.
Hey,
I say.
Hey, Fiona, you look good. Big plans for tonight?
I feign a flirty laugh.
Yes. Yes, I do, actually. We have some time, though. Come on in.
He hesitates.
I was just gonna grab the necklace. I wasn't planning on coming in. Can you just grab it for me?
I laugh playfully.
Stop being so serious. It's in the bedroom. Just come in. Have a glass of wine with me. I'd like to celebrate.
What? Celebrate? No, come on. No games, no bullshit. Just give me the necklace and I'll be going. I'm surprised. His resolve is more than I anticipated.
Trent, seriously, it's fine. Just come in for a minute. I'm not gonna bite.
I laugh again, teasingly.
It's fine. I don't want to fight either. I've accepted things, and I've moved on. So there's no reason for us to fight.
I turn away and head into the kitchen, leaving him standing there in my doorway, confused.
I have to put something in the oven.
I see the look, and he is a fish on a hook.
smells good in here. Are you cooking? Are you expecting someone?
From the kitchen, I speak up.
I am, actually.
Trent steps in, slowly, but leaves the door open. He asks,
Who are you expecting? A new friend?
I smile mischievously.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. I emerge from the kitchen with two glasses of wine. This is the last bottle of wine from that day trip we took. Remember the vineyard by the lake?
Fiona, I'm not here for a chit-chat.
I cut him off. With my hand out, I extend to him his drink.
It's just a quick drink. A toast. To us. To us and each of our new journeys.
What are you talking about?
Oh, hush,
I say.
And wash that bad attitude down with some delicious wine.
I step towards him and clink my glass against his and take a sip of mine.
Close the door behind you, please. I don't live in a barn.
As he closes the door, he looks at his drink and slowly swirls it in a swaying motion. I laugh.
What? You look like you think I laced it with something.
I laugh playfully again and lean against the counter, mindful to slowly cross one leg over the other, grinding the spike of my high heel into the tile. I have his attention. He offers me a faint and curious smile and takes a sip of his wine.
There,
I say.
Satisfying, isn't it?
I smile and lightly twirl my own glass around.
You know, it's funny if you think about it. I mean, who would have thought that a couple of weeks ago that you and I could enjoy one last toast together?
He takes another sip.
Well, what exactly are we toasting to? I didn't think you and I would have anything to celebrate at this point. What's this all about?
Trent asks bluntly.
Therapy is not a guaranteed cure-all. Sometimes it's merely a means of processing and accepting what has been, what is, and what will be. The next season of life. Unfortunately, what's next isn't always what we hoped for or wanted. Might I even add, expected. Rather, it's just the next step in our journey. The next bend in the path. Either way, we grow and we move on. Does that sound familiar? The bells of faint recognition chime in his head, like the distant, eerie moaning of a ghost locked away somewhere in his memories. I'll refresh your memory, I tell him. That's what Dr. Melanie Chambers said to us in our first session. I laugh innocently. What great insight. Wouldn't you say? I mean, how profound. He looks at me cautiously now. I sip my wine.
She also said, it's my unwillingness to let go and forgive that prevents me from finding the path forward. And so, I thought a great deal about that. I did, and you know what? She couldn't be more right.
Fiona, what the hell are you talking about? I didn't come here for a trip down memory lane. Please, what I came here for, can you just get it for me?
His agitation, making no attempt to restrain its vigor.
Hold on, wait, I'm just saying. She was right. I do need to let go. I have accepted what it is and what it was. I'm okay with it now. All of it. I just needed some time to let it set in and make it right.
He stares blankly.
Make it right? Whatever. I'm happy to see you have accepted things and that you're not bitter. Honestly, though, Fiona, I don't care to revisit this with you. Now, just get me my mother's necklace and I will be on my way. Can you do that?
He washes down his disdain for me in a hurried final gulp and sets the glass down hard.
I am not finished.
I bite back.
I want to help you gain a greater understanding of yourselves.
I let him see the fire churning in my soul.
My goal is to help you both find clarity and healing. Well, Trent, it seems I have found both clarity and healing.
His anger now shines through like the scales of the serpent that he is.
Enough! Get it now, or I will tear this whole damn place apart before I find it.
I yell back.
Within these four walls, you are both safe and free. Isn't that what she said, Trent? Isn't it? Well, my love, here within these walls, you are neither.
He lunges forward in a rage, but his intentions are halted by the sudden and potent effects of the sedative he's been slowly sipping. He stops in his tracks and wavers unsteadily in place. Dazed as he reaches for something to support himself, as his knees buckle, I see the look of terror in those mesmerizing eyes right before they close.
Hello, sleepyhead,
I whisper breathily in his ear. He comes to, but the sedatives are powerful and keep him nice and weak. Unable to do much more than let his eyes scan the ceiling of my bedroom. The restraints hold true, and what little struggle he can dredge up is useless. He becomes more alert as he appears acutely aware of his predicament. He thrusts against the restraints, but far too weak, he can only resort to heavy panting. The gag stuffed violently into his lying mouth keeps him quiet long enough to listen and, more importantly, from screaming. I can't make out what he says, but it sounds suggestive and, quite frankly, rude. I think he also may have perhaps mentioned something about a female dog. I smile and stare down at him.
Didn't our dear doctor say something about seeing if she was a good fit?
I scream in his face.
Well, was she? Was she a good fit?
He seems to notice himself, shall we say, in the mood. 150 milligrams of a PDE5 inhibitor will do that.
Show me. Show me!
I scream.
You said I'll do anything. Then show me. That day at the diner, when you got up to use the restroom, I couldn't resist. I suppose I'm clingy, perhaps codependent. I couldn't stop myself. I had to look at your phone and see who had summoned you three times in a span of a few minutes. Imagine my surprise when the ID shows the name Melanie. Melanie. Dr. Fucking Melanie Chambers. Business. A new style of cognitive behavioral therapy. It looked a lot more like pleasure from what I read. After everything, our therapist, the only thing more vile than what you did is what you're going to do next, right now.
I didn't know what it was when I forcefully turned his head to the side, that he noticed first. Was it the sight? Or was it the smell of the bloated gray and green corpse putrefying in the bed next to him? Adorned in nothing more than his mother's necklace and the alluring, acrid aroma of fetid flesh. He begins to scream and vomit, but the gag holds firmly in place, and I wonder, does he love her? Or does she too mean nothing? Well, go on. Kiss her, I say. Look at those lips. So blue. So smooth. He groans in sickening, mortified horror as I kiss him softly on the cheek. Go ahead. You know what to do. You have my permission this time. He screams in muffled protest, but with the barrel pressed against the back of his head, slowly the truth sinks in, as does he. My goal is to help you both find clarity. I delight in this most rancid of retributions, and all I know with absolute certainty is that won't happen again. Thanks for listening, and thank you again to my author this evening, Jeff Kreis, for another fantastic story. If you haven't checked out his other story, 4th of July, then I highly recommend it. And that is episode 288. If you'd like to follow the show on social media, you can follow it at Scary to Sleep on Instagram, Facebook. There's a Facebook group, so you have to answer a couple light questions to join. And Twitter. You can follow it on Twitter. I will never call it X. It's Twitter. not in any sort of rebellious way. I just will never remember to call it X. You can follow me personally at Shelby B. Novak on Instagram and Twitter as well. If you'd like to submit a story to be considered for the show, please send it to scarytosleep@gmail.com. That is for both fiction and nonfiction stories. But if it's a true story for a true story episode, remember to put that in the subject line, please. So send me your fictional stories. I would love to bring them to life, or to ears. I guess to life would probably be more like video, but to ears. I'd love to bring them to ears. Let's see, what else? Oh, remember to go check out my guest spot on the Nightlight podcast. That came to an end with the movie You're Next. I did 4 episodes of the Nightlight podcast. Again, please go check it out. Those guys are great. I love Prince and Freddie. They're just the nicest, best guys, and they know so much about movies, and they're so fun to talk to. And if you'd like to hear me talking a little more casually, then yeah, go check out the Nightlight podcast I did. Them, Funny Games, The Invisible Man, and You're Next. So it was The Call is Coming from the Inside the House month, and it was a blast. I'm going to cut this short this week, folks, because as I'm sure you can hear, the neighbors are playing incredibly loud music, have not stopped, don't know when they will stop, can't stop, won't stop, and I don't want it bleeding into your audio and ruining your evening, so I'm going to let you go. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next week. Oh, by the way, check out the interview I did with Stephen Graham Jones. And I know I hyped it up last week, and wasn't sure if I could say the author, but now I can. So there is, if you look at the feed, there is a bonus episode, and it is me and Jen Adams from The Losers Club interviewing author Stephen Graham Jones, and it was a blast. I asked a question for you guys, and I asked him about some advice for new horror writers, some new horror authors, and so he gave some incredible advice. So stick around to hear that answer, because I threw that out for you guys. I thought, you know what? I'm going to get them something in there. I'm going to get them something to go home with, you know, a little prize, something from a critically acclaimed New York Times bestselling author. So go check that out. All right, everyone, I'm going to go. Please remember to drink your water. Go get some sleep. Sweet dreams.